Hello, and welcome to the Sustainable Life Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to sit down and talk with Brenna Quinlan, an Australian creator who shares her messages of sustainability and permaculture through her artwork.
So today on the show, we have Brenna Quinlan, who's a really amazing artist and permaculture expert, and she's going to tell you more about herself right now. So Brenna, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's so good to be here.
So you're very, very, very famous on Instagram. At the very beginning of COVID, there was an image that you created of kind of like pre-COVID world, COVID world, and what the world would look like after COVID. And I think that image, do you know how many times it got shared? It got shared like a bajillion times on my end. I saw every single account I followed sharing it.
It was one of those, it's happened a few times where I'll make a little drawing in my living room by myself and then release it to the world and wake up the next morning and see, oh my gosh, something's happened overnight. There's emails everywhere and, you know, a bunch more Instagram followers and, you know, whatever it is, all these messages and what was it? What happened? And then you realize, oh yeah, that image just resonated. It was the right thing at the right time and people needed it. And so they took it on, shared it themselves, and it snowballed from there.
So beautiful. And everything you create, you could just really connect with you, and then somehow it makes us feel connected to ourselves too. You have this like universality to your art, which is just so beautiful. Can you go ahead and share who you are a little bit with us?
I'm an Australian illustrator. I really specialize in permaculture and sustainability illustration, also social justice, climate resilience. And so I come at the sort of, my form of activism is making these artworks, these cartoons, these illustrations about how we can move forward in the climate movement, how we can make the whole world a better place for people and for planet. And I have a really positive can-do message in my works. There's a lot of science behind that. There's been loads of studies showing that hearing scary statistics just kind of makes us shut down and not want to listen. But feeling empowered and hearing what we can do is really the best way that we can motivate people and inspire people. And what we need right now is for everyone to feel motivated and inspired and to be doing their bit to make the world a better place.
So beautiful. So I'm going to be a little bit nerdy and ask you even more about yourself, because I'm just so fascinated to know personally. So there's this permaculture side to you, there's a social justice, climate change, obviously a passion side to you, but there's also the artist in you. And I'd love to know how the two came together. So have you always been an artist?
Yeah, since I was really young, I drew obsessively all the time. When I was 5, my mum actually took me along to, she was doing like an adult art class, and she took me along because she couldn't get a babysitter. And I thought it was so cool. And within a couple of months, mum had stopped going to the classes, but I kept going for a few years. And they called me Little Brenna. They had to get a special easel size down for me. And I was classically trained in pastels, in oil painting, in how to paint still life. So that was probably my first introduction to classical art training. And I continued that through university and then studied in Italy after that. But what happened was, after all that study, kind of looking for a job and thinking about journalism, I'd also studied journalism and I was hosting a lot of exhibitions and heading on that path to be an artist as a career, but something just felt empty about that. You know, the goal as a fine artist is to have your artworks hung up in galleries and make a name for yourself and have people pay a lot of money for those artworks, and there can be some meaning in that for sure, but you know, it didn't feel like I was going to change the world by following that path. So I went overseas. I ended up over there for 6 years, mainly in the Americas. And I cycled my bicycle from Canada all the way down to Panama, which took a year, 11,000 kilometers. And just with a bike that I got off Craigslist for $60 and one pair of sandals, you know, really simple. We didn't have fancy gear or anything like that. Meeting people every
night. Just nonchalantly say this kind of stuff. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know if the people listening are feeling this way too, but I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. For you to just be like, I bought a Craigslist bike for $60 and I just like biked from Canada all the way to South America, 11,000 kilometers, no big deal. And you just kind of like said it and then you just like moved on to the next sentence. Like, I want to take a second to like digest that. I'm sorry, what? Like, and this was just something you woke up one day and you were like, I'm just going to bike all the way down to South America. Like, you're so
I think in Canada, we were meeting a lot of people who were, you know, into activism and cared about the planet and had done these huge feats of human endurance in the form of a cycle tour. And none of them were wearing Lycra. Like, they weren't Olympic athletes or anything. They were just kind of, you know, vegetarian hipsters who thought they'd give it a go. And it was their way of going on a vacation that was, you know, carbon neutral. So I heard a few people talk about it and it sounded like a great way to connect with nature and see the country, and a great way to get to Panama without having to fly.
So you did trail on the West End. Is it the main popular one that we always hear about?
Yes, we went from Kelowna across to Vancouver and then down through Washington State and followed the coast down through California.
You know I live in Kelowna, right? So you've been
You're joking. I spent 2 winters there. Kelowna is a beautiful part of the world when it's not on fire.
Yes. Definitely. Okay, so sorry, I interrupted your story. So you rode your bike. This was just something you do because it's normal for you to do something so phenomenal that people, they say they'll do once in their lifetime, but probably don't. You just kind of like did it. So anyways, you did it. And then now you're in South America and go.
And I guess on that bike trip, we were kind of meeting a lot of people who would, you know, people call out to us on the road and say, hey, come to my place for dinner, or hey, we heard your story, would you like a place to stay for a couple nights just to rest, and we'll cook for you and fix your bike up and whatever you need. And so we were experiencing the non-monetary economy, you know, we were experiencing kindness of strangers. People were giving us food, giving us a place to stay. Some people would take us in and say, look, I've got all these bike, like spare tires and stuff, do you need anything? So people were also talking about this thing called permaculture. I think there's kind of some people who have managed to, I guess, sidestep the system for long enough to see that there are alternatives, tend to kind of incorporate non-monetary economy, kindness to strangers, but also maybe food growing and community activism and all of these great sorts of things that we're not really taught about in school, but that still exist in the world in abundance. So we were meeting people who were tapped into this sort of network. And so by the end of it, I thought, wow, I want to volunteer with people like this. So from Panama, we ended up, went to Colombia. Now we're in South America, very big place. Let's give away the bikes to someone who needs them and instead start volunteering seriously. And so for the next 2 years, I was whooping or volunteering at permaculture projects all over South America. And that really cemented the learnings that I'd gained on that bike trip. It was just like this huge mind shift for me and offered those answers that I'd been looking for. I don't want to be an artist in a gallery anymore. I need to be in the world, you know, I need to be interacting with people, taking care of my needs myself. I can grow my own food if I want to, if that's my thing. I can engage with my community if that's my thing. I can be empowered about this and I can actually do good in the world at the same time.
Beautiful. May I ask your age at the time?
That was in my early 20s.
Wow, that must have, like, what a beautiful foundation for the rest of your life. Wow, okay, so you've found kind of like, is it safe to say like almost like your mission in life, your purpose in life at this stage? So what happens next?
Well, I was staying with all these great people who were actively, like their form of activism was building their farm or engaging with their community. We were with this great guy in Colombia whose thing was empowering rural women to run small businesses. So I was seeing all these great models of how you can do what we call permaculture. Permaculture is a way of living, a lifestyle in which we live regeneratively and not extractively. And it's based on these principles, which are pretty universal. So I was seeing this happen in all different guises and I was learning more and more about climate change and the urgency of acting. And I did a permaculture course over in Chile. It's a standard 2-week course. They offer it in thousands of places all over the world. And millions of people have done this course and it's seen as a real life-changing course. So I did mine and I said, great, I'm going to do this permaculture thing. It resonates with me, seems to tick all the boxes. When I came back to Australia after 6 years, I thought, how am I going to do permaculture in Australia? And even though I grew up here, I didn't know anything about sustainability in Australia. I didn't know who to ask, where to go. So I realized that the guy who co-originated, there were two guys that thought up the permaculture concept in the 70s that made it prominent. One has passed away, the other's still alive. So I called him up, I went to his house, I knocked on the door, his partner answered, and I said, can I please be your intern? I just need to keep learning. And they said yes. So I spent the next 4 months interning, volunteering with them. And during that time, David Holmgren was creating his most recent book, Retro Suburbia, about how to live a regenerative life if you live in the city or the suburbs. And permaculture really shifted from this back to the land, kind of tree change, kind of head to the hills movement, which it started as in the 70s. And now it's like, wow, we're all living in the cities and the suburbs. No one's got a backyard. No one's got the money to buy a place like that. How do we live regeneratively where we're at? Because we're busy, we've got jobs, we've got families, we've got mortgages. How do we do it? So his book was about that. He's talking about it every day. It sounds super exciting. And then one day he came to me and said, Brenna, we really need an illustrator. And I know you're an artist. Would you please illustrate my book and help collaborate on it with me? And oof, I tried to play it cool. You know, those moments where you're just like, wow, my hero and my housemate, you know, asking me to work on this amazing project. So until that point, I'd actually never thought of illustration. I wasn't really sure what it was. Wow. But, you know, is it art? It's something to do with kids' books. I looked it up. I was like, oh, wow, it brings people's words to life, really. It brings these complex concepts to life and makes them accessible for people. That's great. I love doing that. So I threw myself into that project. It took 4 months, 130 hand-drawn illustrations. And that really set me on the path to being, you know, the permaculture illustrator that I am today. It was a pretty good first gig. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with illustration that way.
Okay, so they say you should meet your heroes, but in your case, you totally should meet your heroes, right? Like it's worked out really well.
Oh yeah. In the sustainability scene and, you know, the activism or climate scene, permaculture scene, whatever you like to call it, the heroes are all really lovely.
They really are.
Yeah. Like who else, if I was trying to be the best lawyer I could, I don't think I could just knock on some hotshot lawyer's door and ask if I can live with them for 4 months and have them teach me everything they know. But in permaculture, you can.
So beautiful. So for the people who are unsure of what permaculture is, do you mind giving us that description?
Yeah, sure thing. We see it as a kind of life philosophy. Permaculture did start out in the 70s as the word is an amalgamation of permanent and agriculture, but what it has come to mean is permanent culture. And so it now rests on these 12 principles that David Holmgren popularized in his book Principles and Pathways a few years back now. And the principles are stuff like produce no waste, catch and store energy. So they're guiding principles that show us how to live. And every time we make a decision, we can run it by those and say, okay, am I doing the best I can by my principles? So it's not about composting. It's not about growing your own food. Those things come under the principles. They are kind of techniques that are secondary to the principles. And yes, a lot of people associate permaculture with kind of organic gardening. That's a part of it, because in permaculture, we're trying to live regeneratively. So that means not necessarily relying on the industrial food system that produces, you know, huge carbon emissions, huge methane emissions. There's underpaid workers involved in that system. There's huge food miles, there's packaging. If we can lessen our dependence on that by growing some of our own food, that's great. But permaculture doesn't end there. That's just like a tiny slice of the pizza. And the rest of it is what I find super exciting. I mean, yes, I grow some food, that's really good, but also it's about community gardens. It's about bringing people together. In COVID, it's about checking on each other and making sure we're okay. It's about having, we call it the three ethics: earth care, people care, and fair share. So earth care, yes, that's gardening, that's good, but people care is what we really need right now. And fair share is kind of about taking what we need as people, but leaving some for the other life forms of the planet. So it's one of those kind of philosophies that can kind of tick every box if you want it to. But what permaculture does brilliantly is its form of activism is showing what can be done. We don't talk about how bad it is. We know that. We've all been there. We all listen to the news. But what can we do? Permaculture answers that question. And it does it through work like mine, illustration work. My partner's a permaculture musician, so he has albums explaining what permaculture is and inspiring kids to get into it. There are other people that run blogs, that have books, and there's this 2-week course and shorter courses offered all over the world showing people how they can do this.
So beautiful. So now we know what permaculture is, and we're dying to know, how did you become so famous on Instagram now? So how did that all start?
It's the times we live in. I'm a bit of a laggard when it comes to technology. I think those 6 years that I spent overseas and on the bicycle, it was kind of like a crucial technological developmental epoch that I just missed. Like, on my bicycle trip, we didn't even have a phone. We didn't have Google Maps. I don't know how we did it. So when I came back to Australia, I kind of had to play catch up. And while I was living at Dave Holmgren's property, another family, there's three houses there. So the third house was occupied by a family called Milkwood Permaculture. And if you're on Instagram, you may have heard of them. They're Australia's most prominent sustainability education project, I guess, company, their family. And so they were really influential, and they got onto me and said, you need Instagram if you're going to get the word out there. And so I just started drawing, and it was pretty intimidating at first because I was putting out there on social media these kinds of drawings. Like, they're kind of like the sketches that you never think you'll show anybody, like when you're on the phone to someone and you're just like doodling on a piece of paper. That's what that style was for me. And it was very secret and private. Like, if I read a great book and loved a concept, I would draw a cartoon to catch that idea for myself and help me to remember it, to learn it. But I thought, well, maybe other people want to see this. So I started colouring them in and sending them out there. And then, yeah, people were really excited about it. So I think for me, it was easier to get, you know, the followers that I have, because illustration is so shareable. People respond so well to it. And also, I'm so obsessed with doing it that I can consistently release a few every week. I do think it's more competitive these days on Instagram. There are a lot of accounts filling the same niche. Especially sustainability, you know, is like this big thing and everyone's kind of filling the same niche. But, you know, with socials, it is to some degree quality over quantity. It's how much engagement you have. It's how much you're inspiring your followers. And it's the kind of community you create with them, because my followers inspire me to no end. When I release an image and ask a question and people put, you know, like yesterday I did an image about COVID kindness. And how are you feeling kindness or showing kindness during lockdown? And the ideas that people share on there, it's just such a beautiful and supportive forum. And people are thinking up things that I had no idea were even happening. And it's just good, you know, people growing food for each other and mending each other's clothes by the mail and sending secret, you know, letters to people when they haven't written a letter in 10 years, but it's just going to brighten someone's day.
So sweet.
So there's a real community out there. Yeah. And that can happen with 100 followers. You don't need thousands and thousands. So I don't know if that's answered the question. I don't know what the secret is. I think sharing other people's images, if you're not an illustrator, steal some of mine.
And I think what you're trying to say is be authentic. The thing I love about your art, if I can be so honest, is the characters are gender neutral, which I love. And then the skin color is universal. So I feel like everyone feels like you're talking about them in some way, shape, or form. And it's just, you feel it. You feel it. That's all I can really say. So thank you for your art. We love your art. So we're getting kind of towards the end of the podcast now, and I'd love to talk about a takeaway for the listeners. Do you have any tips of like how to, you know, live more sustainably in your life? Any permaculture tips? And like, we haven't even actually gotten into your living space and how, you know, you've created such an amazing space too. So I want to open up the floor to you. Like, is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure thing. So on the living space thing, I don't actually live at Dave Holmgren's place anymore. I moved out earlier this year and moved across the country. We live in a pretty big country too in Australia. So now I'm in Western Australia, right down in the southern part, because my partner's family is from here. And we had a really rough year being locked down for 10 months last year in Victoria because of COVID. So it just seemed like a good time for a change. Now we're in Western Australia, no COVID, everything seems normal, weird parallel universe over here. But we've got a little block of land in an intentional community. So we own a little bit. 20 other people own a little bit, and there's 44 acres of forest in the middle, community gardens, orchards, and we're building a sustainable straw bale house there. So you can follow along on Grow Do It YouTube channel if you feel so inclined, see how we go at muddling our way through making a house. And as far as like a take-home message goes, one thing that has been shown to be so powerful for people is finding meaning in your own life. So if you take a minute, make a cup of tea, grab a pencil and a piece of paper and write two lists, one list of all the things that give you energy, that nourish you in life. And sometimes things that nourish you aren't that easy. Like, I don't particularly love public speaking, but I get up there in front of a whole bunch of people and do it because it does nourish me on a deep level. And then write a list of things that drain you, that take away from your energy. And it's not to see how well you're doing at life. It's not a competition, but it's just to really set out at this point in time what things are good for you and what things aren't so good for you, so you can move towards the one that brings you happiness. And in those things, whether it's being a great parent, whether it's engaging with your school's community, whether if you're an extrovert, it might be talking to people and getting people together. If you're an introvert, it might be caring for people in a different way, or sending letters, or, you know, doing things online. For me, it's art. Find what your thing is. You might be a writer, a dancer. If it brings you energy, make that your activism. See how you can make the world a better place through that thing that you love, because really, the thing that you love is what you're going to keep doing over the long term. And we're in this for the long term. It's not like, oh, if we don't make 1.5 degrees, we'll give up. No, we can always make things better. We can always make things less bad. And there are so many run-on effects from trying to make the world a better place. You go to a community garden, it's not about the food that they grow down there. It's about the connections. It's about getting people together. They're building soil, so they're trapping carbon. There's a million and one things that they're doing brilliantly. And the food is kind of like a side effect. You know, sometimes it doesn't even get eaten. That doesn't matter because it's done so much good. So find what makes you come alive, follow that, and use that to bring meaning into your life. It will bring you so much happiness, because it has for me.
Thank you so much for being on our show today. I really thought you were going to say something like plant your first plant or something like that, but that was way better.
Do that too. If planting things is your thing, then go with it. But it's not everybody's thing.
Awesome. Thank you. Was there anything I missed, like anything else that you wanted to share?
One of the things that has been really useful in my work as an illustrator is forming a community on Patreon. That's where people can give a small monthly donation, usually the price of a cup of coffee, to help me to continue releasing these drawings on Facebook and Instagram for free for the world every week. And we've formed a really beautiful community there. So I get a lot of ideas from my Patreon supporters, and there's videos and great stuff up there for them to use for free as well.
And what's the account? Is it just your full name?
Yeah, search for Brenna Quinlan at Patreon.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Sustainable Life app is a free mobile app available on both Apple and Android. Our app connects you with sustainable businesses and brands. Adding businesses to the app is super easy. Once you download the app, simply click the Add a Business button in the app to add your favorite eco establishment. Use it at home or while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. Want to know about our app's core values? They're the 5 factors for sustainable consumption and the 5 factors for recycling responsibly. The 5 factors for sustainable consumption are impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and an individual's unique socioeconomic outlook. The 5 factors for recycling responsibly are reduce, reuse, repurpose, repair, and recycle. To learn more about the app, visit www.sustainablelife.app. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community. It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app and our platform positively impacts your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of CE Sustainable Life Incorporated and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love and light in us salutes the love and light in you. See you next time.